My first reaction was, no way. No, 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 no. Don't need that at all. That was to the proposed Christmas gift Wendy had in store for me. You know what it was? That may sound really bad, but let me explain. A stationary bike. Now, my initial reaction, you have to understand, was part of the consultation, because when you purchase these things, you can't take it back. So she had to make sure that I would want it and use it before. So she had to tell me beforehand. But it was because of, as I thought about it, the reaction had to do with the fact that to accept that gift meant I had to make a commitment to use it. Right? Don't you agree? No sense just having it there. In fact, I was visiting yesterday with someone. They were telling me about some exercise gym that they have, and it says it makes great apparatus for drying their laundry. So, yes, there are different ways of using this equipment, but no, I felt if I was going to accept this gift, I had to use it properly, not for laundry. And so that implicates, in a sense, my participation with the gift. And so I thought about it, and after initially saying no, after a few days, I said yes, and I made that commitment. New Year's Eve day, I put it together. I'm thinking, I get a gift I have to put together. Sounds like a long time ago, the kids' toys. Put it together, felt really good about it. There it was, all set up in the basement. It looked good. It looks good. It really does. And I said, you know, starting beginning of the year, New Year's Day, okay, I'm ready to do this. I'm going to do it. I'm getting on the bike. I woke up early. I went down. I looked at the bike and it was still looking good. But I have to confess, I didn't get on it. I didn't get on it. And don't feel so bad. Don't feel so bad. It's not a broken resolution. It's just postponed. But you know, after thinking this through a little bit, I said to myself, I think I want to stop making fun of people's resolutions. I want to stop teasing people about giving up so quickly or making unattainable things. Because whether it is to stop smoking or exercise more or eat right or read more books or get in touch with people more, whatever it is, I'm convinced that it comes from a good place. It comes from the belief that we can be changed, that we can be transformed. It comes from the possibility of difference to be made in our lives. And that needs to be honored. But I wonder if we don't need to go deeper. Because often the resolutions that we make, they come out of a sense of scarcity or busyness or the first things that come to mind, this is what I'm going to do. And although they may speak of a desire to be transformed, they don't go deeply enough. They don't come from the places in us that truly, truly are in need of fundamental transformation. We think of our text today, and as followers of Jesus Christ and children of God, I believe that such deep reflection is crucial. Hear what the text says that we read together, alternatively, in the responsive reading. And the Word became flesh and dwelt, tabernacle, lives with us. And we beheld or saw. I like the word beheld from behold, because it is more than just a passing gaze. It is a enduring, lingering regard. We beheld His glory. Full of grace. Now the first part, I believe, is true. It is about God's gifting of this Word made flesh, of this Jesus gift. But I'm not so sure about the second part. How well, how deeply, how thoroughly do we truly behold the glory and the truth of Christ? How deeply do we? Is it as superficial as some of our resolutions? How do we steward the mystery? The choir just sang, have our eyes open to the wonder and the awe. I think that we are summoned to go deeper. Teresa of Avila, the 16th century Carmelite mystic, wrote a book called The Interior Castle, in which she likens the soul to a castle filled with concentric rooms and invites us to go into those rooms, as it were, to discover with prayer and silence and meditation and patience what is yet to be uncovered about who we truly are and what our deepest longings are. It seems to me that if our resolutions, if our commitments came from the deepest places in our lives, I think we would be more likely to keep them. They would be fueled by the passion and the desire to be authentic and truthful and noble and just and godlike. So it's not so much the practice of making resolutions that's to be dismissed. It is how do we get to that place where the kinds of resolutions we make, the kinds of promises, the kinds of desires fully reflect and express what is most nobly at the core of our being. And so I want to suggest some things. How is it that this word becomes flesh, and our words can become flesh as well? John's gospel is different from the others in many ways, but when it comes to telling about the gifting of Jesus, it is more about the experience of that community, about what this gifting has done to them and among them, than it is a description of how it happens. Notice the use of the language there and the paradoxes. This word was God, yet this word came to us, became flesh. This word was with God, yet this word dwelt among us. Paradox. But notice the pronouns. We. And we beheld his glory. Us. The community. It is trying to give testimony, give voice to the experience of what does this mean for us. And in order to do that, one has had to ruminate and reflect and to pray and to steward and to host this glory in your life. It is an invitation, this text is, for us to take it in deeply. And so let me offer a few suggestions about how this word can participate with our words to become flesh in the world, because the Spirit of Jesus continues to live. It is not only then, but this word still dwells with us. Gathering on the momentum of Advent, I would invite us to prepare, to the spiritual practice of preparation. You know, when you think about it, too often we move directly towards performing action because we have become a society that is action-oriented. And we do not spend sufficient time preparing. What is preparation? Preparation is a process of clarification about what it is one is called to be undertaking. What is it that we are meant to be putting our foot ahead of the other into? That preparation invites us to go very deeply into the purpose for which we are acting. What is it really about? Rather than rushing into these things, what is the stillness and the noble passions that are seeking to emerge in order for we and all of us to resolve to keep them? So that's the first thing, inviting us to prepare more, deeper. Spend time before acting. And it is an ongoing thing. The other is never stop starting over. How do our words become flesh, participating in the word? Never stop starting over. I've heard people say, by the second week of January, oh, there is, I blew my resolution. Now I've got to wait a whole other year. Who says you have to wait to New Year's to make a resolution? Never stop starting over again. Let every day be a new beginning. Let the Word become flesh and minister to you, because that is the gift of God's forgiveness. Often, constant, enduring, deep. I had a conversation just leading up to Christmas with someone who has gone through a very, very difficult year. And she said to me, you know, I acted very badly. I let myself down. I was not my best self and participated in things that were just awful. And I've prayed and I've come to the sense of peace that God has forgiven me. But I can't forgive myself. And I said to her, I understand. And we've spoken quite a bit, so feel free to talk and challenge her. I understand what you're saying, and it is a good thing that you have come to the place where you have received and accepted God's forgiveness. But let me say to you, with all the humility, but also the forthrightness of what I believe the gospel teaches, how dare you place yourself above God? For when we fail to forgive ourselves as God has forgiven us, we are saying that we are holier than God and we hold ourselves to a higher standard than God does. To forgive ourselves, recognizing the gift of forgiveness from God, is an act of humility and obedience. To not forgive ourselves, I believe, is an insult to God and a rejection of what God is offering us. She said, I have to think about that one, so I'll let you know how the conversation goes. Never stop starting over again. The third one is reconciliation. Reconciliation is a necessary undertaking if we are to realize spiritual health and other health. The inability to be reconciled with others, with ourselves, and with God stands as one of the foremost barriers to our well-being. So this year we ask ourselves, whom have we hurt? Whom do we need to seek forgiveness from? Whom do we need to offer forgiveness to? This past week, the CBC has had profoundly compelling stories. Some of you may have heard them. I've been out visiting a lot, so traveling in the car, and I've had an opportunity to hear these. And I was absolutely moved, sometimes to tears. I don't remember if it was Wednesday or Thursday, but the interviewer was talking with Pierre Allard. Some of you know them. I know Barbara does. We've shared times with him. He was a chaplain to the penitentiary institutions. He has done extensive work with rehabilitation, extensive work with restorative justice, bringing victims and oppressors together. And he told the story of his time in Rwanda, Bugenzera in the south. The story of Marianne and Bertrand. Marianne had 8 children and a husband. In the time of genocide, 7 of her children were murdered, and also her husband. It was found out, finally, that the one who perpetrated this atrocity was someone by the name of Bertrand. Bertrand was presently in jail. Miriam is the leader of a group that has brought together former oppressors and butchers and murderers with the victims and their families, the families of the victims, to form a cooperative to build houses for those without homes. And as they came together, Mary Ann told the committee, the organizing committee, that the very first house that they were going to build was for the family of Bertrand, the murderer of her family. And she told one of the members of the committee to go to the prison and tell him that, because they needed shelter. And they went and they told Bertrand. He said, "This is crazy. Absolutely not. I don't believe you. It's a lie." And so Marianne herself went to the prison and looked Bertrand in the eye for the first time and told him, "It is true. I am going to build a house for your family to live in." And he could not believe it. He was reduced to tears like a little baby. For such grace was unknown to him. And the Word became flesh and empowered the words of Mary Ann to become flesh to Bertrand. Heard another story about Father Thibault. Father Thibault is in our own area. He's presently serving the Catholic priest in Cornwall, and he, for the first time, told this story on CBC this week. Father Thibault, as a child and a young altar boy, was sexually abused by a priest. Went through tremendous pain and anger and all that accompanies such atrocity. What is interesting and seemingly to some ironic is that Father Thibault became a priest. And he shared very profoundly the journey and the anger and the angst and the difficulty of that journey of faith for him. He talked about locking himself in the church at one point and screaming out in anger to God for how this could happen. And then he ended the interview with a story when he was serving in Chrysler, small town, of a man that wandered into his office. One day, this man had been driving aimlessly from Ottawa. The man had been accused and was in the midst of a trial for incest with his two daughters. The man was at his wit's end, found his way into the rectory at the church where Father Thibault was, and he sat. And he spoke, and Father Thibault says, "I wonder how he made his way. He must have passed so many churches on his way from Ottawa to Chrysler. Why did he end up here?" And he said, "I believe it was God. I believe it was God that brought him here. Because before I went through this healing process of what happened to me, I would have felt very judgmental towards this man. I'm not saying I condone what he did. It's heinous and wrong. But I had a word of grace to offer him. And I could not have done that before. And the Word became flesh and enable our words, Father Thibault's word, to become flesh to this man." On Christmas Day, it is my custom. I don't think this is overly virtuous because I think it's partly selfish. I need to do this. I spend part of Christmas Day at the Carlton Tavern. Now, before you jump to any conclusions, it's not that I've been driven to drink from all the services or anything. The Carlton Tavern in our neighborhood provides a free meal on Christmas Day from 11 o'clock till 3 for any in the neighborhood that need a company, that need a meal, and give them gifts and encourage them. And it's one of the ways that I find for myself essential to engage and experience Christmas, because I need to hear of people's life and story and the good news that is operative from the margins, which is part of the Christmas story. And one of the things that I do, because there are many volunteers who serve meal and prepare the food and so forth, but in consultation with the Hindenburg Association of Economic Development and others who helped to sponsor this, one of the things I do is go and I look for those who are sitting by themselves, those perhaps with some suggestion of anguish and loneliness, And I sit with them. And I listen to them. One couple, this time, were ecstatic. Not only did they enjoy the meal and the dessert and so forth, but they were ecstatic because their 22-year-old son, for the very first time since he was taken away from them as a baby, was living with them again. And they talked about their journey of brokenness. And how on this day, they said, this Christmas day, for the first time, we now know what it means for God to give His Son to us. Because we have been given our Son into our lives again. Out of their own mouths. And the Word became flesh. And the Spirit impressed upon them their words to me and to each other. How that became flesh. To become flesh means to be rooted in the human experience. Jesus came to dwell in the mundane and all of the drama of our lives. That Word took on everything about us. And inspires us with our words and our actions to become involved in one another's lives and the life of the world in such a way that blessing and awe and grace and glory will be beheld. This year, let us resolve to grow deeply in the way of Christ. Let us resolve to be open, to be startled again by the awesome glory and grace of God. If that happens, I firmly believe that we will find emerging from ourselves those resolutions that are worthy of honoring God, stewarding our lives and our best gifts, and mending the world. In the Jewish practice of New Year, Rosh Hashanah begins with 10 days of what's called awe. And those 10 days of awe are meant to be a period of reflection on how to be reconciled in relationships with people around you, with creation, with Yahweh. May we be enriched by such tradition to spend, we don't have to put a limit on it, days of awe where we search for opportunities to be reconciled to God, to one another, and to the world, with words and actions that become flesh in others' lives. Amen.